Now, from a nondescript server room in a top secret location in Southern California, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
Tons in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. For starters, I'm going to talk about the upsides and downsides of tech in our lives. I've got some listener questions. Megan, why do my smart home devices always seem to need a different app? Darius, why do companies fight so hard to prevent us from fixing our own devices? Max, why does my gaming console lag in multiplayer games? On the IT Pro series, I'm going to talk about the idea that we need to be careful that recruiters and HR, they don't lose the employee search to that cold-hearted AI. Steve Kesky is going to go through and discuss pulse ox meters. We're actually going to talk about Red Cross and the tech they're using and some other cool tech that's along the way. Keith M. Zedor, smartphone disability features that are valuable to all. Marty's going to talk about the Plaid Note and the Plaid Note Pin Bundle. And these are wearable AI dictation units. You can talk and you plug it into AI. It's a cool little thing there. And on the scam series, Leo tells about how his elderly mother almost gave her bank info, and he wanted to know how to prevent that. If you miss any of that, of course, you can check out the podcast online at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can also reach me there, or you can call me at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-6373-888. Let's dive into the news and something that's been a long time in coming over on the Etsy front. Etsy is this wonderful marketplace where people put up their items for sale that they've crafted themselves. Well, Etsy is starting to crack down on the 3D printing, but the key thing here is of other people's designs. Now, let's be clear here. There are many people who make their own designs. There are many items that are available on Etsy that are original items. But there are others, and I've seen them, that are only making money on the idea of the work of the 3D printing itself. They're grabbing their designs from Thingiverse and a lot of other places. I applaud the protection of intellectual property. The idea that people are selling things that are built off of designs that are publicly available and they're passing themselves off as original creators with their own original creations, that's something that nobody should be doing. It's like selling a song and I pretend that I made it when it's clearly a Beatles song. With the Beatles singing on it, that's not really a good idea. Anyways, there are some gray areas in this, as there are some people who are making little minor changes to bypass this idea. So we're going to see some more changes coming along the way. Now, we journey to the land down under, and there is a very interesting rail locomotive experiment that has been put into place for regenerative braking, and there is this idea that you actually can put more energy back into the batteries from braking that you do along the way. Well, they applied that. We've seen this in cars like the Tesla and other electric vehicles. Well, there they applied this to an entire train engine. Fortescue came up with the idea of this iron ore train. Now, it is fully loaded on what is nearly 700 miles of a downhill trip. And during that trip, it basically charges the batteries up for the empty ride that goes back those same 700 miles. It goes back and forth the entire time while they're using that energy of going downhill to charge it all up so that they can go uphill empty. It's great. They're calling this the Infinity Train, and it completed their first test this past week, and it seems to have been successful. And this is really great because they only unveiled this idea about 3 years ago. This could be a game changer with the idea of saving vast amounts of fuel, reducing emissions, and, oh yeah, it's cheaper in the long run. That's a great idea. The TSA, they update the items that are allowed or not allowed on flights to, from, or within the United States. And it's all about keeping us safe in the air. They've released an emergency order this past week about your cell phone. And from here out, it won't be allowed on flights. Well, wait, okay. It's only if you have a Samsung Galaxy Note 7. That's the one phone that won't be allowed. If you've got any of the more recent phones that are since 2016 when this came out, when it came out, by the way, we talked about it back then because it had issues where it would regularly catch on fire. So the big, huge news here is, why is the TSA waiting so long? Why are they talking about a 9-year-old cell phone with known problems? And why did they need an emergency order today? Hey, haven't all the users moved on from that phone yet? Still, okay, if you've got one during screening, I'm going to tell you, this is my advice to you, throw it out. If you have one, even if you're not going through screening, throw it out. Get a new one without such a bad, famous history for catching fire. Now, there's been a strange lifeline to those who want to run Windows 10 for another year. It comes with strings, and they aren't good. With the first one, the option is to back up everything to the Microsoft cloud servers with Windows Backup. You'll get another year for free on Windows 10. You can redeem 1,000 Microsoft rewards points, and that could be an option for people. Or you could pay $30. I'm going to tell you up front, this is really only for people who want what is 1 year more to make the decision of if you're going to stick with Windows 10 or go to Windows 11. To be fair, they gave a lot of warning. It's 4 years ago this month that they noted that the drop-dead date would be coming. It does puzzle me why they persist in these weird tactics when clearly Windows 11 is not exactly a favorite, with only a very recent shift in numbers where they just recently went to the point where there are more Windows 11 than Windows 10 users here in the United States. Worldwide, not the case yet. Now, a concerning item came out this past week, and it was the revelation that nearly half of companies out there will pay up if they get stuck with ransomware. This is a rough decision. I'm going to tell you that I do understand. Having been at a company which got hit with ransomware, there were quick, just off-the-cuff things, well, why don't we just pay it? It's because, well, I think we've got it under control. I think we can do it for far cheaper than what they're hitting us up for. But there are companies out there where they realize getting back on track quickly is a key concern. There's a long-held thing that companies that go down for a matter of a week, they've got a 50% chance of still being in business in a matter of a year. Now, there's been some difference of opinion in regards to how this works out today, but you've got to really think about this. Is it worth it? On the other hand, I preach against this idea for everyone. It only encourages it and emboldens the bad guys. These are digital terrorists. And what is the rule? You don't bargain with the bad guys, period. The recent numbers aren't thrilling either, with an average of nearly $2 million for companies between 100 and 5,000 employees. Personally, I think it's better to put that level of money into things like backups, better IT teams, education, and all of the other preemptive measures that you can put into place. In the mid-90s, I got one of the best sound cards available. The Creative Labs Sound Blaster AW32 was more expensive than the others, but it had a level of recognition in a field where everyone else was and also ran. Most people have moved on in the last 25 years since the last bug report. Still, it became an oddity this past week when it was announced that there are new patches in the Linux kernel for this specific 30-year-old sound card. The card itself actually hasn't had a motherboard that it could work on in some 20 years, but Linux lovers really do still love to run some of that old hardware. It's a contrast after the last 2 weeks where I've referenced Windows 11's struggles with forcing people to purchase hardware to replace five-year-old computers. Now, I'm not running Linux, but I am actually thinking of doing a load up on one of my spare computers here in my lab space. But we'll talk about that in the coming months. Coming up next, the upsides and downsides of tech in our lives. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. I want to spend a few minutes here talking about technology and what it's brought us and just kind of a current look forwards and backwards and see how this all fits in today as we've entered and moved through this digital age. Computers have been an integral part of our daily lives. We started off with just simple things like computers on our desktops, but then we've moved into smartphones and laptops and self-driving cars and smart homes. Computers are ubiquitous throughout, and we rely on them for almost everything. But how did we get here? And what are the benefits and challenges of living in a world that is dominated by technology? One of the underlying quotes that I want to use to drive this topic is that the human spirit must prevail over technology. That was Albert Einstein who said this. Yes, we have a lot of benefits that have come along from technology. We've got the idea of improved communication. We've seen the rise of the internet. We've seen the catapulting of social media. It is easier for us to stay connected and communicate with each other, regardless of the other person's, our person, our location. We have things like instant messaging. We have video conferencing, which has gone to a new level because of COVID. Email. And these have all become staples of modern communication, and we've left some of them behind. I know some people out there, I don't want to deal with instant messaging, and others out there, I don't want to deal with email, but we need to be bringing these in together. But we've got to take advantage of this. We have to use, again, as Albert Einstein said, the human spirit must prevail over technology. We have the capability to collaborate and work together far more effectively than we've ever been able to. This modern communication is important. And then we've seen just a rise in efficiency and productivity. You see, computers have transformed our workplaces. They've made it possible to process vast amounts of data quickly and accurately. It started off with simple reports. It started off with just very basic items where we said, hey, if we can automate this little item here, now we're moving to a new level with AI. And this is going to be exciting in some regards. It means we have to change. We will have to adjust to this. But all of this processing of the data has led to improved efficiencies. It's led to reduced costs in a number of areas. It's led to increased productivity across all industries. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about the auto industry to finance to healthcare. It doesn't matter. All industries are getting better there. And we have an access to information right now that is just absolutely amazing. I look back. There's a reference years ago that most people knew about all of the events of the world that could be contained in one issue of the New York Times. Today, we have the ability to see very, very small items and news items that come up that are in other countries far around the world. And they may be of interest, they may be something that scares us or whatever. The internet has made it possible for us to access an almost infinite amount of information from everywhere. And it doesn't matter. I want to put news aside. I want to put aside the current events. Academic research. And I'm not talking academic like you're in college. I'm talking about just you and I looking to improve our knowledge of whatever it is we're dealing with. Computers have made it easier for us to stay informed and educated regardless of our location or background. We can learn more in regards to computers. We can learn more in regards to our hobbies. We can learn more in regards to just about anything. The information is out there on the internet, and there are you want to learn how to crochet. You've never held the crocheting needles and yarn in your hand. It's okay. I haven't either. But maybe you want to learn more about that. There are entire groups of people out there on the internet that will spend time with you and will guide you through the basics, through the intermediary, through the advanced. There are challenges. Don't get me wrong. There are plenty of benefits here. Some of these challenges, as computers have become more integrated into our lives, we have also become increasingly dependent on them, leading to dependency and addiction. For some people, this can lead to a lack of social interaction. This can lead to a whole variety of different issues where people aren't getting along. We need to be recognizing those. And we also are seeing physical problems. People are having eye strain. They're becoming far more nearsighted because they're looking at screens that are just an arm's length away from them all the time. We also have people who are experiencing greater back problems, neck pain. And this is a challenge, and we need to be working through this. Then we've got the issue of privacy and security. With all of this rise of technology, with the internet, digital communication, the issues here have become a major concern. We see hacking, identity theft, cyber attacks. These have all become more common. Here on the show, I have backed off years ago when I started doing this. Hey, there's this big, huge hack. There's this big, huge cyber attack. There's this, there's that. And I got tired of covering it because every week there's something big, something new. There are certain things we have to pay attention to, but we don't have to pay attention to all of them. And that's actually kind of sad that all of these attacks are happening and we're just ignoring them. But as we, you and I, store more and more sensitive information on our computers and online, the risk of all of these data breaches, these privacy violations, they go up. This is something that we're not going to be able to stop either. Then we have the idea that, yes, people have been able to access vast amounts of information, connect with each other around the world. But when we talk about this, I will note that not everyone has equal access to this technology. Those who are in developing countries, low-income communities, or rural areas may not have the kind of internet speed that I have. They may have some very slow speeds there. And that is going to exacerbate existing inequalities. It's going to limit opportunities. There's a lot of upside and downside to technology, and it's up to us to bridge that gap. Look, so much has happened over the course of my life, and the big thing here is the improved communication, efficiency, and access to information. And what I've driven here is just one particular small section of how technology has impacted our lives. I want you to recognize that there are challenges, and we need to be addressing them, whether it's the dependency item, whether it's the privacy and security concerns, and the unequal access. As we continue to navigate this digital age, we need to strike balances with both the benefits and the challenges of technology. We, individually, as groups, as a people, need to be working to address each of the issues that arise. We need to be making sure that we are all moving forward and we are getting better, because that's what technology is about. Technology is about improving lives. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Keith McCedor joins me now. And Keith, one of the things that I've done over the years is I've tinkered around with accessibility on the iPhone. And there are...
The iPhone?
Yes.
I thought you were saying on the computer, okay, but on the iPhone. Okay, tell me about that.
So one of the things that I really enjoy... is when, and I did this early on, when your phone rings,
okay.
One of the features that you can set up is that it will flash.
My wife
do a nice little strobe flash. Yes.
And I don't know why she uses it.
Because you can actually turn off the ringer itself, and it'll sit there and flash. Also, I like to keep my ringer volume down, and I used to work in an office where it was actually kind of loud. I had a server rack right behind me.
Okay.
And this thing, it wasn't loud. It wasn't like, you know, burst eardrums or anything, you know, concert level.
Right.
But it was enough so that it was nicer. It was easier to have my phone just sitting face down. And then if I got a call in, it would just flash. And if I wanted to take it, great. If I didn't, I'd let it flash just a couple of times and then go to voicemail. So That is one of the areas that I really enjoy. I also enjoy that magnifier, which is just like taking a picture. But, you know, you load up your camera, but there's actually just a magnifier setting in there, which does, I like how it also, it sets it up, but it also has like some kind of image stabilization that's worked in there.
And one of the nice things with the magnifier is you can actually put that in the control center. So if you need that as a tool, like you need to regularly magnify an image or see something larger, you can go right to your control center by swiping down from the right corner, and then boom, you have access to it without going through a lot of menus.
Now I don't use this often, and when I do use it, it is for stuff that is really small. But another thing that I do use it for is kind of an alternative, a variation on the theme of I dropped something behind the dryer the other day. And I was trying to fish it out, and I couldn't. I mean, I could climb up on top of the dryer, but that was going to be a complete total disaster. You know, at a certain age, you go, I'm not climbing up on top of that thing, because if I fall off, I'm going to hurt myself.
Yeah.
So I just grabbed out the magnifier, and I just put it over the side and even turned on the flashlight so I could look down there and see what was there. And then just with the optical image stabilization or whatever it is that they're doing,
right,
it really balanced that out, so I could see all the way down and go, oh, okay, that's where it is.
And you were able to get it and retrieve it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that is a great thing to have on hand. What are some of the other items that come to mind for you that you like?
Well, I just made a recent discovery. We know as Mac users, we have a startup chime on the Mac, and there was a time when Johnny Ive made it go away for a couple of years, to much uproar and fervor from Mac users who had a startup chime all the way back to the original Mac in 84. But the iPhone actually has a startup and a shutdown chime. And I discovered them accidentally in the settings.
My mind is blown. You're kidding me. So I don't do it very often, but I want to know, A, when it's shut down all the way, and B, when it's come back up. I want exactly that. So where is that
at? If you go into the settings app and just swipe down so you can get the search bar.
Yeah.
And just look up startup chime.
Startup. All right, I'll look for it. Yeah, okay. That sounds absolutely cool, though. That is something we should all
have. It's actually, honestly, yes, it's cool. It's actually a little jarring, because when you're used to 20 years of a device
just being silent,
sounds when you turn it on or turn it off, it's like, oh, what was that? And it's like, oh, that's the startup chime I turned on.
Okay.
And it gives you the option of turning one on or the other or both.
Okay. I am seriously digging that. What's another one that you utilize that comes in handy?
As far as accessibility goes?
Yeah.
I don't know that I use a lot. Well, here's one. Actually, one of the features that I really like is that there's a built-in Apple TV remote.
Okay.
And because the Apple TV is logged in with the same Apple ID as my devices, I like to play little pranks on the kids, because if they're using the remote for the Apple TV and they're searching for something, I'll get a notification.
Yeah.
Hey, this would be faster if you did it on your phone. And so then I'll start typing in like Star Trek or something. And they're like, what's that, Daddy? What'd you do? They know it's me, but, you know, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So trying to think of, I mean, there's obviously the things where you can change keyboards, where you can change what the side button does.
I like the back tap. I've used the back tap. You do a triple back tap, and I've used that for a long time to set the screen to all red, which is very handy when you're in a dark environment. So having mixed sound for my church for a number of years, you don't want the big, huge white glow back at the at the sound booth when the entire church is dark. All of a sudden, you know, the church is dark. Boom! There's the somebody's on their phone. And, you know, I keep a lot of notes there as far as what's coming up next. So that's always come in really handy, a nice red shift for it. There's a lot of things. It is well worth checking into, even if you do not have any disabilities or anything like that. There's a lot of fun features there.
A lot of cool features.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you. Of course, there's the podcast, too, and all kinds of other things, like our news items and so forth. Marty Winston joins me now. And I rambled there for a moment. I don't know why.
That's okay. Look, speaking of computer and talk.
Yes.
I started carrying a little gizmo in my shirt pocket. It's roughly the size of a stack of two, maybe three credit cards. And anytime I think of a note I want to tell myself or something I want to tell somebody else, I push a button and start talking, then a longer push to end it. Mm-hmm. This little thing records whatever I say, whatever anybody else around says. When I want to do something with what I recorded, I go to my phone, I open its app, and it quickly transfers from the little pocket device to my phone. One more click.
So wait a second. We're talking like a police body cam kind of thing?
Smaller,
but it's just audio.
It's just audio.
Okay, go on.
Just audio. Well, one more click after I've transferred, and it gets recognized and transcribed with my choice of three AI engines. It's all pretty fast. It delivers a transcription, a subject recap, and a mind map of whatever I said. This thing is called Plaud, P-L-A-U-D. And this model is the Plaud Note. It supports 112 languages, not including Minion, and comes with a case and a ring from MagSafe on iPhone where it gets enough vibration to record phone calls. It's about $160 on Amazon, including 300 minutes per month of transcriptions. You can buy more if you need more. There's a sister product about $10 more, and it's called the Plaud Notepin Bundle. It clips to a shirt or snugs onto a wristband or hangs on a lanyard.
I'm not going to name the other product, which went out of business about 2 months ago. But it was at a price point, which was I forget off the top of my head. I think it was like $800 or $1,000 for it.
Yeah.
This seems like a good contrast to that. It's doing the same kind of thing, but at a, a far, far better price point, which does make it attractive.
And so it is.
I'm liking that.
Yeah, it's very practical. Something else I want to cover while we got a little bit of time.
Sure.
We've talked about migrating to a new computer, and that means moving all those files that aren't going to fit on the new computer. So let's connect the dots on this. Microsoft announced an end date for support to Windows 10, and that but many the Windows 10 users are on computers that they can't upgrade to Windows 11.
Sure, yeah.
And so if you've added any drives since you bought the old PC, well, you may want a lot of capacity for moving those files when you set up your Windows 11 replacement. So I got in the 6 terabyte, and here comes the full name, WD My Passport Works with USB-C drive.
So meaning, Western Digital.
Yeah.
Go on.
A USB-A to USB-C adapter for the connecting cable in the box, maybe A for the old and C for the new. So you use whichever one you got, right?
Yeah.
You can connect at a USB 3.2 Gen 1 speed of 5 gig, or the drive inside, according to PC World, reads at about 130 megabits per second, writes at about 115.
Okay.
If now, this is rotating magnetic media. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a full 6 terabytes to move, 6,000 gigabytes, 48 million megabits, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you're writing from your old PC onto this drive and then into a new Windows 11 machine with, we assume, an SSD, it takes roughly 4 days, 6.5 hours in each direction if uninterrupted.
Yeah.
Now, you may perhaps want to consider being generous in your outbound saves, but more selective, even miserly, in what goes to the new PC. Remember, you can always reconnect to fetch anything else because the drive still has it. I see the 6 terabyte version of the WD My Passport Works with USB-C drive as a good way to make sure I don't lose track of my archives. However long it takes to get them onto the drive, they're there. It's about $170 to $190 bucks online.
You bring up a very valid item, and people think, oh, hey, I'm going to get a brand new computer, and I'm just going to plug it in, and everything's just going to be there. And everybody needs to plan, whenever you're doing an upgrade like this, you need to plan in the time to do it and do it properly.
Yeah, and not only will not everything be there, the thing that's most likely to be not there is your work.
Yeah. And this is whether you are doing a PC to PC migration or even just a matter of doing an in-place upgrade. So maybe you've been putting off Windows 10. I put off Windows 10 on my primary system for the longest time. It was the last machine to roll over to Windows 11. Previously it was always the first machine I would roll over, and I did not trust Windows 11. I didn't like what I was hearing. I didn't like what I was experiencing. It's going to be a very interesting thing. We still haven't reached the point where there are more Windows 11 users than Windows 10 users. And we're here, what, 2.5 years, or is it 3.5?
But they pulled the plug on support, so we've got motivation working now.
Yeah, there is that. So, so many different things. Yes, definitely a good idea that Western Digital, My Passport Works with USB-C drive. Okay, what a mouthful. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. Bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. Leo reached out. My elderly mother almost gave her bank info to a quote-unquote tech support guy. How do I help her avoid that again? And there is so much that is here, and we need to be sharing this with everybody. We need to be communicating all the way along in both directions. Mom needs to talk to Leo. Leo needs to talk to Mom. Mom may need to connect up, and anytime she's going to send out any kind of information, money, whatever it is, she should verify with Leo that, hey, is this okay? And there's a lot of different folks out there that are very reluctant to do this. No, build up the relationship there. I am going to tell you that this is a very difficult thing for a lot of people. It's like teaching someone to spot one fake bill in a stack. We're not talking just 100 bills. We're talking out of thousands of bills, and you quickly find that one, especially since a lot of the time the scammers are moving quickly. They're putting pressure. They're putting just sort of the screws to the person going, hey, you've got to do this right now. You've got to make sure that you are taking care of this issue, because this is, in this case, the tech support guy. This is something you're going to get a virus. You've already got a virus. You've got to attack this now. Otherwise, the end of the world is going to be here. And they're experts at this. You've got to create a simple don't trust first contact rule. And there's no calls from Microsoft or Apple or whoever else. These folks do not reach out to you. You need to set up things like caller ID blocking, caller screening apps, and things like that. Next up is a little bit more difficult. Go on out, find what the big scams are out there. And I would suggest, especially with someone who hasn't been through this a lot, you're going to role play some common scam calls with your mother. And this is for everybody, with your grandmother, with your grandfather, whoever it is. Anybody who seems that they could be particularly vulnerable, you're going to walk them through. You want them to build these reflexes of not trusting everybody that's reaching out. And perhaps some of this is going to be in the form of that role playing. Sometimes you need to go through and post very clear what not to do lists. What kind of different things? And you're going to put this near the phone. She answers the phone and it's someone who says, oh, hey, this is Leo and I'm in trouble. Well, you don't sound like Leo. Well, that's okay. It must be the phone connection. You know, whatever it is, you're going to set up all of these different things so that she can already know in advance some of the problems that could be coming her way. And this is very important for everybody to do. Look, last but not least, if she's open to it, you need to set up a trusted contact list that she can stick to. She can know that, okay, if so-and-so calls from this number, it's probably okay. Don't give out X, Y, Z, whatever information it is. Make sure that, and this is a lot of education, and it's hard. Last up, be forgiving, no matter what. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep. Helping you make sense of technology. Here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. Of course, the website is computertalkradio.com. We make it really easy for you. Computer Talk Radio. .com. If you'd like to contact us there, of course, we will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. But if you'd like to have a human voice, you can always call me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Steve Keske joins me now. You might have heard him in the background there. And Steve, you've got a very interesting topic so let's start off. Let's describe, of course, the little gizmo you wanted to talk about. It is a pulse oximeter, which I had seen these in the doctor's offices before we had that whole COVID thing.
I've been seeing this for, last 30 years.
Sure. But
in doctor's offices.
But it isn't until, of course, COVID happened that they became ubiquitous in many of the homes across the country.
Yes.
Everybody all of a sudden knew exactly what they were. And I'll tell you, I know people that have like three or four of these. And they give your pulse, they give you your oxygen level, and they're very cool. But you said you found out the technology behind this.
How much oxygen you have in your system.
Yeah.
Now, that relies on two infrared sensors.
Mm-hmm.
One sensor counts the number of hemoglobin,
mm-hmm, okay,
cells you have flowing through your body,
mm-hmm,
that are actually filled with oxygen.
Okay.
Because see, the ones that are not filled yet, we don't want to talk about those yet.
Uh-huh.
And the other sensor says, ooh, you got real small blood vessels, or you got real large ones.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And the reason for that is that, let's say I had a count of 50 hemoglobin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the difference, because it comes out with a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, if my blood vessel is a real large.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That count now says, okay, that's that percentage. But if I have a narrow one, that same count now is a higher percentage.
Sure.
Because there's fewer there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how it works.
Okay.
So when you look at when you ask the hot tech, when you go to the doctor's office, well, what's the reading? Well, your reading is you've got about 92% oxygen. Mm-hmm. Well, that sure means, how many. It doesn't tell you exactly how many. It tells you the percentage.
Sure. It's like if you were measuring the amount of water going through a faucet, if the faucet is small, if you're counting one vertical line through, you might count 50 drops of water sailing past the sensors. But that's all based off of a certain size. So you've got to detect the size of the faucet, the width or diameter, really, of the pipe. Because if you only counted 50 drops of water going by, but the faucet is ultra wide, let's say, I'm going to go off the charts here. It is a 4-inch wide, you know, big, huge faucet that's going into your sink.
That's not
into
very
your
much
sink.
Water.
Typically they're about, I think they're, what is it, 1/2 inch, 3/4 inch?
Something like that.
So 4 inches, there's going to be a lot of water that's going to be rolling off of that. So you've got to measure volume. So I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take that lead into a different direction, because I've been donating platelets for a very long time, blood and platelets for a couple of decades now. So with platelets, you can go in 24 times a year, not just, I think it's 4 times a year for blood.
Yeah.
And so when you go in, what they would do is they would check your iron levels, your hematocrit, and for ages they would stick you with a little pin, much like the diabetic glucose tests. You know, they poke your skin and a little drop of blood comes out. Years ago when I started, they would drop that droplet of blood into this small little vial that had a liquid in it, and you could time how long it took to get to the bottom.
Yep.
And that would be your guide. Then they went to electronic testers. It's very interesting you bring up the pulse oximeter, though, because today the Red Cross is rolling out these electronic testers. They put a very similar to the pulse ox item. They put a little thing around your thumb, and it measures without the stick that they used to do. So it just does it utilizing infrared lights on whatever particular frequency that they need to and all of that.
Yeah.
And it gives a nice, very accurate reading on it. Actually, they've gone to the next level, which is they used to take your blood pressure. So each of these things, so blood pressure and your pulse and your hematocrit, would take a matter of probably 3 or 4 minutes, depending on how fast the person was. Now, It's on the order of about 30 seconds once they hook you up. And it's amazingly fast. It's painless now. Okay, don't get me wrong. When they stick you with a needle, it's still sticking you with a needle to drain you of your blood. Not all of your blood, but they're not vampires. We only make that joke around Halloween.
We only make that joke because we appreciate their doing what they do.
Yes. It's actually funny. You know, I've been donating so long at each of the centers, they come to know who I am. They know me by name. Hey, Benjamin's here. Come on in. So, yeah, it's absolutely great.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you had another item, though, that was very similar in nature for working with light. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what this I have determined was there's a way to take a gel.
Yeah.
Put it inside a capsule and put the capsule underneath your skin.
Okay.
Now, you have to understand that these are cells that we're putting in underneath your skin are micro-sized.
Okay.
They're very small.
Mm-hmm.
So they put in usually more than one. But what it does is it doesn't show up until you go outside.
Okay.
When you go outside in the sunshine, the radiation from the sun,
the ultraviolet light,
turns the cell fluid to a different color.
Very interesting. Okay, so I've seen just in the last week and a half, somewhere in there, I saw a video which was a very similar situation that you can do to your kids. It's not an injection based.
Yeah.
But it's a little stamp or whatever. They put a little bit of ink on to the kid in standard light indoors, it doesn't show up at all. But when they go outdoors, once it starts to turn purple or green or whatever color it is, then you know you need to apply sunscreen.
Yep.
And it's also waterproof.
Yep.
So that when the sunscreen wears off, because even waterproof sunscreen has its own kind of lifetime.
It's got a time limitation.
It has a reminder there for people to go ahead and apply
more
sunscreen, which absolutely is amazing. Now, I didn't do any research to find out if this is a prototype or something that is on the shelf now, but I'm sure it's not going to be long. It's going to be...
No.
That'll be a good thing. I got so many sunburns when I was a kid.
I don't get sunburns.
You don't... Well, you have to go outside to get sunburns.
Well, even when I go outside, I never get a sunburn.
We're nerds. I don't go outside very often. It's like...
I don't anymore.
I walk to my...
when the temperature gets so up. That's so high.
We're here in the middle of summer. Yeah.
It's because I was... When I was a kid, I went outside all the time.
Yeah.
You know... So I got a natural change in the molecular structure of my skin that I don't.
So you easily tan is what it is.
You got that right.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Kesky. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh, yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh, yeah, the promo. 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Megan reached out to me with a question. Why do my smart home devices always seem to need a different app to work properly? Megan reached out to me at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. I am interested in helping you bridge the gap and get better at all of this. And I understand Megan's struggle here is something I deal with regularly. Why do my smart home devices always seem to need a different app to work properly? Now, when I went forward with my entire smart home, and I've got a lot of stuff here in the house. It's about 50 switches and 20 light bulbs, and that doesn't even include some of the specialty light strands where we've got a bunch of bulbs on it and things like that. There's a lot of different directions I've gone in, and I understand it's like buying tools from different brands. You've got a Ryobi drill, but you've got this saw that is from Milwaukee, and you've got another one that's from Craftsman that's another, whatever, a rotary saw. And each one has its own battery. It has its own charger. It has its own color. It's got its own user manual. It's got its own case. And it gets really crazy at times. And the first biggest thing that when I moved, I decided I was going to restart up the process. I went with the idea of I'm going to avoid the big, huge, fragmented ecosystem. Smart home tech is still relatively new. There is no real universally adopted standard. So each brand has built their own ecosystem, their own companion app, their own various sets of communication and drivers and everything else along the way. Now, before I go too far, I am going to talk about Matter here in just a few minutes, but that's its own little thing. Everybody has gotten to where we are right now by doing it on their own. There are certain companies that have latched on to other companies' standards. One of the big ones out there is Tuya, T-U-Y-A, and there are a lot of different companies that work with that. Now, there are some blah companies, and there are some better companies. And yes, there's Govee. They've got their own ecosystem, but it's dedicated to them. Tuya has been kind of a different force out there. And a lot of my items throughout my home are built off of compatibility and chosen with compatibility to Tuya, which is also referred to as the Smart Life app. And that is something that you have to make a very specific effort to go and process your and plan in that direction. A lot of companies believe in this idea of vendor lock-in. They want to keep their devices exclusive to their platforms. And part of that is because they're hoping that you're going to buy again. You're going to be focusing down, much like I chose to go down this path of making sure it was compatible with everything. I'm going to use one app to do 95% of the different items within the home. And maybe it's 90, maybe it's 98. I don't know exactly. I've got a couple of items that are kind of quirky. And I focused it all around the idea of it being compatible with Alexa, which is what I've used for a while. I could have gone the Smart Things route. I could have gone with the route of any one of these other different packages out there, one of these different systems that are bringing everything together. But I felt like Alexa was going to be the easiest long-term compatibility throughout. And it's based off of Amazon has been pushing this idea for so long. They are probably the biggest driver out there encouraging us down that smart home route. Yes, Google's in there, the Google Home stuff. And that's a different kind of system altogether. And I felt better giving my information over to Amazon than to Google. Go figure. Now, a lot of the brands out there, they do not like other systems to control their devices unless you use, again, as you've discovered, the official app. There's ideas of privacy, functionality, or licensing issue. And believe me, there's definitely people out there. We've got these different standards. And everybody wants to join up with one or the other. But every time you buy something that is compatible with Alexa, well, they're actually paying Amazon a small fee for that compatibility with Alexa to post that logo onto their box and in their manual and all of that. Is it a whole lot? I don't know. I'm not in that part of the world, but I believe it's probably a lot lower than is the Samsung Smart Things approach. I believe it's a lot lower than Google Home. It is still going to be more than Matter, which, again, I'll talk about that in a moment. We then do need to realize that there are certain security and update routes that come along with this. Your various devices and device settings and firmware updates, they can only be applied via the original app. And this is to ensure that there is secure access and control. Yes, we have started to see that a lot of these devices are self-updating. They're gaining the firmware from the manufacturer instead of through the app, and that is a very good approach. I think that we are going in a better direction with that, but it's not perfect. Matter, however, which is still in its infancy. There's a lot of different companies that are talking about compatibility with Matter, and the Amazon Alexa devices of the last, I think it's about the last year or so, are in, they're adopting Matter into this. And Matter is its own standard. It's its own setup of communications and controls and all of this. And it's basically, the idea is setting up a universal language for smart devices so that you can make your different directions, your commands that go on out to the light bulb over there. And it's going to be via this very universal standard of information flowing throughout your network. Yes, it's going to go to your voice assistant. It's going to go to your Google device or your Alexa device or whatever it is that you've got. But then it sends out the same signal no matter what. If everybody gets on this one standard, which is a near open source standard, then everything is going to start clearing up. I'll tell you, I went with a standard. This is 25-ish years ago, maybe 23. It was X10, and it was its own thing back then. There were other standards out there, and they couldn't talk at all. You couldn't even get a brain that would talk to two of them, let alone all of the different hundreds, thousands of manufacturers out there. The big drawback with Matter is it's been slow going. In the approach for gaining universality, I'm not sure how to pronounce that off the top of my head, but for the ability to communicate with all of these devices, they've had to talk to a lot of people and say, we want you on board. How do we get you on board? Just like power tools are slowly shifting towards shared battery systems. If you go on out and you buy a Ryobi set of tools, they're all going to hopefully have the same battery systems. Just like that is happening, smart devices are inching towards that level of harmony, that level of all interacting seamlessly in our lives. But until then, I'm going to tell you, unless you are very purpose-driven with this, I want you to understand and expect that you're going to have a drawer full of apps to deal with all of this. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Darius reached out to me, why do companies fight so hard to prevent users from fixing their own devices? Darius reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can reach out to me as well. Just scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back with you and answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. In Darius's case, I just look at this, and why do companies fight so hard to prevent us from fixing our own devices? I will tell you, I struggle with that. I know that. I see some of the planned obsolescence that we've got going on in this world where, yes, we're being pushed harder and harder to fork over more and more money faster and faster. And yes, if our fridge breaks, we can call a repairman. And even today, we're starting to see kind of a decline there where I have a friend, his fridge went belly up, and it was going to cost him about $700 to fix a $2,000 fridge. And that's a big, huge point to start thinking about. I recently, a while back, I had an issue with the washer, the clothes washer in our house. And they wanted a very tidy sum of money to fix that washer. I actually looked it up online. I said, okay, how hard could this be to replace these four suspension rods? And it wasn't hard at all. It took me about a little over half an hour, I think. And yes, I accidentally cut myself while I did it. But look, I was able to fix it myself. But we're getting to that point where some of that knowledge is being hidden away from us. I was lucky. I was able to find a YouTube video that said, hey, this is how you fix this. But yes, we've already started to see where if you have a cheaper fridge, it's going to be cheaper to, go on out and buy a new one. If your smartphone breaks, the manufacturer wants you to buy a new one. The television goes belly up. Same kind of thing. And that's actually been that way for a while. Look, locking out repairs is one of those key items which they do see as ensuring more sales. If something costs almost as much to fix as it does to replace it, a lot of people are going to say, well, why am I going to fix this item that's 5 years old when I can replace it for another $100 more? Or $200 more, or whatever it is. And this is something that we've turned into a very throwaway culture. And I struggle against this. I don't think we should be going this route. I think of my friend with the fridge, and one of the things I commented to him was, I have a friend who has a fridge that was built probably back in the 50s or 60s. It has one of those big, huge handles on it, and it makes that big, huge, satisfying chunk, thunk, when you open it up and when you close it. And it's by our standards, we would think it's archaic. But they don't need – refrigerators don't need any of the big, huge brains that we put into them. We don't need all of these touch screens, but these touch screens break down pretty quick. So there's a lot to this. Proprietary parts and proprietary software are starting to create this artificial dependence. Apple, we can use Apple as an example, but Samsung does the same thing. They have paired individual parts to specific devices. So even if you swapped out a battery or you got a brand new screen, it can be blocked by the software. And that is, Apple got the big news on that. They were the ones who got the big attention. Samsung was already doing the same thing. And all of these different things, they're things that we are going to be struggling with for a very long time. Repair restrictions protect these various monopolies out there. If a third-party repair shop can easily fix everything, manufacturers wouldn't have control over the process or, admittedly, over the profit. And that's why, yes, even some of these more complex things that you and I would not dare to even try to repair, Apple goes, no, you have to go to a very specific series of people who have all of these pedigrees in repair and all of that. And they've made it hard for even those repair shops to replace it. Why? Because they have more profit coming in the door whenever they sell you a brand new one. And this all is about data as much as it is hardware. A repaired phone means they don't get to start hitting you up for more cloud backups. There's no new account setups and no fresh terms of service agreements that grant the company brand new permissions. All the way across, we have started to see people push back. iFixit.com is one of the folks that's leading that charge, but there's so many others out there. And all of these different folks are pushing back. But this is slow. There are right to repair laws that are coming along out there in a number of states, and even on the federal level, we're getting some ground here, and they're gaining traction. But companies are going to find ways around that. They're going to set us up and say, oh, hey, if you want to get into it, well, yeah, you've got full access to it, but you have to have this weird-shaped screwdriver that nobody has ever made before, and we're the only ones who make it. The trilobes come to mind, the pentalobes. There's all kinds of these different screwdrivers. I've got a bunch of them. And eventually, yes, somebody basically makes a knockoff of it, and it fits and it works, and now you can get into whatever it was that you were locked out of before. But it's going to be a struggle. It is a struggle. It's going to be a bigger struggle for a while. So past, present, and future tense, all of that. I do believe that we all should have the same right to fix our technology as we do our cars, our homes, our appliances. Anything less than that truly is artificial control. It is something that we need to be taking a far more active stance against. We need to be telling these companies, look, if you're going to provide us garbage products, we can move on. We can find another alternative. This is something we're going to be struggling with, and it's up to you. Not just Darius, not just me, but all of us, everybody listening to me. You need to be thinking about it every time something breaks and you have to go replace it instead of repair it. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting, archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, how it all fits in together. And there is an increasing level of reliance upon AI to sort out who the best person is going to be for the jobs that we have open. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about is for those people who are in a hiring position. Now, if you're looking for a job, you probably will have a lot of this resonate with you. The idea of the cold calculating machine, AI, going forward and choosing whether or not you are the absolute perfect person for a position. Now, let me get this out of the way. AI has its place. It is great for grammar checking. It is great for summarizing meeting notes. It is great for giving all kinds of ideas to build a company to a better position, a better place in the marketplace. But in the hiring process, we are going to be walking a razor's edge between efficiency and erasure. Now, when AI goes through, it may help you find the best fit. I was going to say a good fit, but it's going to help you find the best fit. But it's going to be operating on all kinds of different things that are really not what we want to look for. It's going to filter based on patterns. It's not going to look at potential. It's going to screen out a lot of the noise. But sometimes The real plus is in that noise. It loves consistency. But humans, you and I, we are absolutely a total mess. We are brilliant contradictions in everything. Sure, there may be a job hopper that has a whining resume, but maybe they've been surviving life while still chasing growth. What about somebody who might have an outdated certificate, but perhaps they bring three decades of wisdom that artificial intelligence can't even begin to measure or even think about? What if their resume doesn't fully match the template? All of these things can screen out someone before we even get to the next level. We will see job postings. I see them all the time, which talk about we want something like originality. We want creativity. We want diversity. Whatever it is, we have all of these big, huge, nebulous terms that are thrown out there. But then when we run it through AI, we're going to get back candidates through this artificial intelligence that are all going to be rewarded for having the sameness, the same wording, the same matching to the job description. And any deviation from that is going to be a concern. If there's a gap in employment that the AI can't explain, it's going to flag that. If there's a degree from the wrong school or the wrong school of thought, that might filter it out. And what if the entire resume doesn't scan through cleanly? What if AI kind of looks at it and goes, well, I don't know exactly all of this. I got most of it. So it's going to ignore that. Look, we need to be very careful. There is a cost that comes with relying on AI too much. We can build teams, and these teams will look good on paper, but they will lack the spark of experience, of that creativity and originality and diversity that I talked about earlier. This future that's ahead of us, if we keep leaning on all of this artificial intelligence without really taking the human look at this, without going through each of these resumes. And look, I get it. If sometimes you've got this deluge of resumes, you're going, I don't know who to pick. But this is really going to be a problem. We have to have that human balance. Otherwise, we're going to have these AI systems out there that are doing this ultra-heavy screening, and we get people that are kicked to the side because their resume doesn't quite match. And instead, we will wind up with people who are targeting or writing AI-driven resumes. They are putting out information that is specifically built to get past the AI, and it matches up way too much. And here's the real danger. In this job search, it's not going to be that the employee or potential employee, the candidate, didn't impress the recruiter. It's going to be that the recruiter never even saw that candidate. And that could be because the algorithm didn't like the font, or it didn't like the job title, or the way that the employee zigged when other people would have zagged. Look, we need to be thinking about a world where we accept that there are going to be weird people out there. Yes, I'm going to tell you again, use the tools, embrace the tech, but we need to keep the human side in all of this. We need to keep the people in this entire equation. Don't mistake polish for promise. And by all means, don't outsource the idea of curiosity to something that doesn't have curiosity. Because once every resume starts looking the same, clean, optimized, empty, it's not just candidates is going to lose here. It's going to be all of us. And we aren't even going to realize that we've done this until it's our turn, where we are the invisible ones. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Max had a great question. Why does my gaming console lag during multiplayer games, even though I have fast internet? And Max reached out at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. And there's a lot of different things I threw at him. There's not one simple, easy answer that goes, hey, this is exactly what it is. And I get it. You know, and I'm going to relate this, this for everybody. This can be on any kind of gaming thing, and it's like having a sports car that's stuck in traffic. You've got that speed, but there's no room to move. And I'm going to tell you, there are so many different layers involved with the potential for speed that can be blockers. So first off, we need to talk about latency. And latency is something that's going to affect the online gameplay of any kind of gaming, whether we're talking PC or console or whatever. It's a matter of the signal that goes out from your computer through your local router, whatever you have in your home, and maybe this is a Wi-Fi router or whatever, and then it goes across the internet to your internet service provider, really. It goes to your internet service provider and then out from there out to the internet and then across the internet, making a number of different jumps trying to get to the gaming server. So the signal goes through that entire path. And then it hits that gaming server. The server goes, okay, this is the information I'm going to send back. And it comes all the way, weaving its way back through that same path. And if it takes a long time for that signal to go all the way out and all the way back, that's going to slow down your game. And that could be a slowdown because of any of those different links all the way along being congested. It could be the local congestion at your internet service provider. It can be a matter of the link that leaves them and goes to their higher tier provider. It can be the game servers themselves. They may be overloaded, or even worse. Sometimes these gaming servers, you're dealing with a game and you're thinking, hey, I'm dealing with people, I'm playing games against them, and they are right next door to me. You got your good buddy next door. You've already checked out. Hey, our user IDs, we know each other's user IDs on Xbox. And your signal is not staying at a local server. It's not even going from house to house right next door to each other. But what it's doing is it's traveling halfway across the country before it goes to the server, and then that signal comes all the way back. But it also has to do that over on the other side for your next door neighbor who's doing the same thing. So all of this can throw that off. Even using Wi-Fi instead of a wired Ethernet connection, that can increase your latency. And also, it can introduce something called packet loss. And all of those different little bits and pieces of signal, like I said, it goes out to the server and back. If it misses once, it goes, hey, I'm going to send that signal again. And it goes out and back, and it does succeed. That packet loss is also a problem there. Lots of different things that factor in. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.